Welcome back. I was going to say welcome back to the Bite Nutrition podcast, but I don't really know if we want to call it that. I think this is a different thing. This is a joint chat. I have Alex Thomas with me here from Sports Nutrition Australia. So firstly, Alex, say hello, say hi. Who are you? What do you do? Why do you do it?
Thanks for having me, Jono. I'm Alex Thomas, as you said. I am from the Sports Nutrition Association based in Australia. And what do I do and why do I do it? What I do is we look to establish the standardized best practice of sports nutrition within the regions which we operate, which is Australia, New Zealand, Asia, or certain Asian countries, the USA, Canada, and certain European countries at this point in time. Why do we do that? Because nutrition is an unregulated space. It is the Wild West. I would love to say it's not. It still is, unfortunately. Check back with me in 10 years' time and we'll see if that's changed.
Yeah. The Wild West is just that phrase that keeps coming up. Hey, it's horrible. It's a shame because there's some really fantastic bodies out there, you know, like governing bodies, not good looking bodies. Anyway, there's both. But today we're going to be talking more about the governing bodies and I guess scope of practice, that big conversation, and really looking at the difference between nutritionist, dietitian, sports nutritionist, sports dietitian, and I guess maybe some of the problems or gray areas in some of those industries as well. I know that particularly the term, the phrase nutritionist can mean a whole host of things, right? From very, very legitimate, very structured, you know, with tons of scope around it, through to someone deciding that they just want to call themselves a nutritionist. And so we're going to unpack, I guess, why that is happening, what the differences are. Maybe we could chat about what to look out for, you know, if someone is just looking to get some nutrition help, how can they not get burnt? And then also if someone is looking to study nutrition and get into nutrition, how can they make sure that they are picking somewhere good, you know, doing their due diligence, making sure that they're getting an actual scope of practice, they're getting the right insurances, they're doing the right pathway. So I'm going to hand over to Alex because he's got you described it as the formal part of it. So Alex is actually prepared for this chat. So give us the background.
Okay. So the skeleton or the structure of this is going to go, really the burning big rock behind this all was we get asked frequently. Oh. So we're going to try our best to have this as a resource to explain what the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian is. So that's our primary big rock
with a snappy pull quote as well. So we need to make sure we can extract a 45 second snippet.
Yeah.
Don't know if that'll be doable.
We're going to be answering that burning question of what is the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian for one. And then we have some small little subcategories of that. So what's the difference between a dietitian and a sports dietitian? What's the difference between a nutritionist and a sports nutritionist? And then getting into some of the weird, wonderful other areas where people aren't nutritionists. I should have had my nutritionalist show. Damn it. I have missed
prime opportunity. We'll fix it in post. Here. We'll fix it in post.
Yeah. We'll need to pop this in. Where it's what we call, credit to Kyle Weber, the physique coach, came up with it years ago. But he calls them nutritionalists.
That's amazing.
It actually has come from a place of like jest, but since he's come up with it, he's seen people legitimately calling that. We've received inquiries, two inquiries this year from people with nutritionalists in their bio, seriously.
Okay.
But what we mean by that is it's like they're not a nutritionist. They understand they're probably not a nutritionist if we were to hold them to any form of like formal minimum standards that may or may not exist. And there's some form of like nutrition service provision in the form of like guidance and counseling. And so what the difference is between a nutritionalist and a nutritionist.
Yeah. Should we start there? What's the difference between a nutritionalist and a nutritionist?
Yeah, we'll start there. But before we get into that, we also need to say we've done our research, but the judgments, information, and things that we're going to be sharing are on the basis of what we found on specific professional organizational websites, government body websites, government websites, social media pages associated with these types of organizations. So it's not an exhaustive thing. It doesn't mean that there isn't information saying things to the contrary of this. But if anything, it serves to highlight how confusing this is. So,
so open access, like where, by the sound of it.
Yeah. So we're trying to make sense of something that's really confusing. We think we've done a pretty good job. Jono's going to be live reacting to some of this information as well. So I was messaging him in the background saying, like, oh, I've got some good stuff, but he doesn't know what it is.
Thank you. I like that. Gives me a plausible deniability. I appreciate that.
Yeah, exactly. So some like research has occurred, some research. It's not like Jono actually did a post on this the other day, and it's like, I've done my research. It's like that kind of research, but it's not intentionally poor quality research by virtue of the fact that like I'm looking to confirm my bias. It's purely because getting your hands on clear information in this space is really difficult. Part of it's because as someone who runs a professional body, you're encouraged to have as much linguistically open terminology as possible to protect yourself. Johnny spoke about plausible deniability before. So like the legal teams that you work with, they're going to encourage that side of things. Within SNA and the association, an important value for me is just making things simple and clear though. And so if it's simple and it's clear, it's very hard to be misunderstood and misinterpreted. And then we can look to improve things and be more effective at establishing that standard that we want to see within the industry, or establishing a good level of a minimum standard. So clarity and simplicity is really important for myself and the organization. It's not to say that that's the same for the others. And if it's not, then they may just be taking the advice of the legal teams, or it could also be the fact that they also don't want to be that clear because there's a market of revenue that they've generated on the basis of ambiguity. And which is it? I'm not going to say. I don't know, but there's definitely both.
I think if you, as someone who is extremely active and well-read in this area in terms of, you know, scope of practice and, you know, curriculum and all of these things, if you, yes, like you said, you've done your own research, but you have come from a very well-educated aspect. And if anything that you claim in the next little while is quote unquote incorrect and someone wants to reach out and tell us that it's incorrect, I think that probably speaks more to their messaging or lack thereof rather than your poor research, you know. Because if that's how you've interpreted it and if that's the information that you've been able to provide, how the hell is some poor 18-year-old high school graduate looking to get into nutrition, or some mid-30-year-old professional looking for a nutrition professional to help them, how are they expected to do better?
Dude, definitely. And like, I'll just say this as well. Like, I think you and I both share this. I love being wrong and corrected, so that way I can learn more. Like, I just love learning. And this is an area that I am genuinely interested in, which is sort of weird for 99.999% of people, and I get that. But the reason why I like it is if I can learn more about it and I can get clearer, then I can help communicate what that clear interpretation is. So that way more people within the industry, more professionals or more aspiring professionals, or even just the public engaging the professionals, can make better informed decisions. Because the way I think about this is, and one of my colleagues was saying this to us yesterday, we had a sort of like big team development day yesterday within the whole association. And a guy who does our like culture and HR doesn't really understand the nuances of the industry that much, but he explained it simply. And he was like, you know, would you get someone to build your house who's only constructed a cubby house once? And like, would you get your family to live there? And it's like, no. You'd be like, no way, that's not safe. And that's what we're doing with our health, right?
Totally.
And we're putting our health in people's hands who potentially have no idea what's going on. And, you know, people might think, oh, well, like it doesn't really happen, or like, you know, like nutrition, it's pretty small.
Oh, it does. Pretty big. I have hundreds of clients who are recovering from seeing other professionals, you know, and I don't mean seeing a professional that they didn't gel with or they didn't connect with or just maybe didn't get them the results they wanted, but a professional that has actually damaged their health or their relationship with food. Like, it's a very real risk.
And I would say 99 times out of 100, that same professional who's like caused that outcome, their intention is not to be negative.
No.
Like, and so like they're well-intended. They have positive intentions. They're just not necessarily, they're like uninformed, misinformed, however you want to put it. And
yeah,
you know, misinformation and disinformation can be quite dangerous. And so two specific things come to mind. Like Lane posted about, I think it was today or yesterday, there was the raw vegan girl that died from malnourishment.
Yeah, yeah.
And so like you would think, I mean, a personal bias that I've always had towards like raw vegans, I'm like, well, they're encouraging people to eat more fruit and veg. That's great. Wouldn't be that bad.
Yeah.
And then when I saw that today, I was like, wow, I probably need to rethink this and potentially go a little bit harder.
There's so much. Who are they hurting? Are they really hurting anyone? Like, come on. It's like, yeah. Well,
people need to eat more fruit and veg. Like, they don't eat more fruit and veg, right?
Yeah.
We can rationalize it however we want. So there was that one. And then a lot of like the carnivore stuff that's been popping up and the people who are on statins then moving to the carnivore diet.
Yeah.
And, like, this is where I'm starting to have a bit more of a firmer, less sort of understanding based on positively intended or well-intended uninformed people's positions, purely because, yeah, the results can be
they're going to kill people horrible. Like early.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they're going to take 10, 20, 30 years of people's lives, even with like, I don't really give, I've never professionally sworn. That's a fun fact about me. Never in recorded. And I almost did because that's how angry this topic makes me. But yeah, they're going to take years and years and years of people's lives. They're going to take family members away from families and they're not going to be held accountable at all. So I don't really care how well-intentioned they are, you know?
It's nuts. Yeah, it's nuts. So to get back to the topic at hand, the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian, and we're going to address the sub one, nutritionalist and nutritionist. The short answer is there's no difference. You may as well just, and I would say for 99% of the countries out there, nutritionist is not a protected term. It means nothing. So if you're a nutritionalist or a nutritionist, it doesn't matter. And so what does this mean? It means that you could watch a YouTube video and start charging for it. Like there's no length of time that you watch a YouTube video on.
Don't even need to watch the YouTube video really, do you?
You don't. Like, yeah, that's a terrible, you don't need to do anything. I could meet someone and say, be a nutritionist, start charging. There's no legal recourse. And what I mean by that is, and this is the interesting stuff, is that there's, in the majority of countries, there's no law prohibiting them from doing that.
Mm.
And so when we're saying laws, we're talking about criminal charges being applied to someone. Like there's a specific law against this. You've chosen to violate a law, right? Like you're now a criminal and you face criminal damages and prosecution by the state or whatever the local government is or relevant government is in that area. That is not to say that if something goes wrong, you will not get in trouble. That's just to say the moment you start engaging from that point in a country where there's no actual law stating it, there's nothing stopping you and you're not engaging as a criminal at that point. So it's the same way as like burglary, right? Like you decide to break that law, you can now get done for burglary. In the majority of countries, there's no laws for this. There are laws for the practice of unlicensed practice of medicine with doctors, but we don't have anything in the nutrition space.
That's wild.
And as a result, now in some countries, I should say there are laws, right? So certain states in America have state laws. Italy as a country has laws where it's only a dietitian. Taiwan is another one. That they have laws where only a dietitian may work in a professional setting as it relates to the prescription or professional intervention of nutrition, personalized nutrition services with people. So that's really cool. But even in Australia, for instance, there's no laws saying you have to be a dietitian or you have to be this minimum standard of profession. In other countries, there are certain protections and registrations and recognitions associated with registered nutritionists, accredited nutritionists, and there are minimum standards that exist there, but it's few and far between. We're talking about a similar amount of countries that have the law for dietitian have legitimately government recognized and chartered nutritionists and endorsed nutritionists. So when we look at the industry as a whole, it is primarily a self-regulated, self-appointed industry that I think in both, this is a safe assumption to say, in both our opinions, you know, we're doing a poor job of.
Yeah.
And we're quite behind in as far as that goes.
And I think that... You go.
Oh, I just finished this with saying, so like that's the bottom end. And then the top end is you have these people with decades of experience, multiple postgraduate degrees in these nutrition programs. So they may have done an undergrad in health science nutrition or human nutrition or health science clinical nutrition. And then they go on to do masters in human nutrition, masters in sports nutrition. They might have two masters and or two or three or two masters and a postgrad in some form of an applied nutrition, specialized nutrition field without it being dietetics as well. So some of these people, by today's standards, might have $150,000 worth of student debt associated with their nutrition studies, but not be a dietitian. And so that's the spectrum of the nutritionist.
Yeah, that's what I find so wild. And I feel really sorry for, like, I know a lot of phenomenal nutritionists who are very legitimate and have those qualifications, maybe not 150K, but, you know, like have at least an undergrad and a postgrad, or even just like a, you know, an undergrad from a legitimate, you know, university. And they are technically being lumped in with that person who just decided to go, well, I like food, I've lost weight, or I don't know, I've cured my Crohn's disease. I'm going to be a nutritionist, you know, and like it, I feel for those people because yeah, they've done the due diligence. They've done the proper ridiculous amount of study that we have to do, as they should, you know, like you said, we're playing with people's health here. It's serious. But to just be painted with the same brush is pretty awful. I think, correct me if I'm wrong. There is a registration process for nutritionists in Australia, isn't there? But it's a
NSA. ANTA and NSA,
and it's but it's opt in, isn't it? Like they
opt in. Yep. It's not mandatory. In both of those, it's degree minimums. However, and this is where what people don't necessarily understand, and I think this is where I'll get a live react from you. So I'm just gonna quote some stuff. And this is where it gets confusing, right? So we might have someone that's a registered member with ANTA or the NSA, and they're practicing and working with people in a health setting, where like trying to improve their health. There may be a condition that they're working on, and so they're like, "Yeah, I've studied these things at uni. I'm good to go." Quoted here: a nutritionist is not qualified to provide medical advice or medical nutrition therapy. This is the role of a dietitian. And so that's where, even with some of these uber qualified nutritionists, and that's quoted directly from the NSA website. I'll send links, John, and we can provide links and stuff.
Yeah, I'll put them on the show notes.
And that's where we get some of the like crossover as well. So even when we get these really good degree qualified people, they're not aware of what their scope is. So if you're registered with the NSA, your scope, to my understanding, and this is after having dialogue with a few of the members and board members of the NSA, members at a foundational level, these people are practicing. Like they think that they're registered to be practicing and they're going to get an insurance product that's going to cover them. That's not the case. So the NSA is there for, it's not for service provision and private practice. It's there to be registered to be a part of evidence-informed communication to the public.
Yeah.
So it's more about the research and public health communication of that side of thing. It's not even there for the practitioner. So if you were wanting to go into private practice, then you would be with ANTA. The ANTA scope of practice, and there's another one, I think it's called, I'm just going to bring up, it's really long-winded. It's like AANTPRA or something like that, or AANT. I probably won't find it in time, but I'll add the link in as well. you can register with them. So it's not just Anta. There's two other bodies. The one that I'm referring to now is a bit younger. It's more in its infancy. It looks like it's got a more established scope. Anta doesn't have it. So Anta is the Australian Natural Therapies Association. And so the scope of practice for Anta is quite, not quite, it's very ambiguous. And so if you were a naturopath, if you were a nutritionist, if you were a homeopath, I don't know if homeopath is like still within that, but that's who you would register with. And if you had some form of nutrition service provision within your practice, then you all get the same natural therapies policy. And so the scope isn't clear. I couldn't find the scope of practice for a registered nutritionist with ANTA. And so we, within the association, because we deal with sports, we get a lot of inquiries from people who are like, oh, I'm already registered in practicing. And we're like, look, just send through your scope doc, like your insurance docs and all this kind of stuff. We'll make sure you're all good. We're happy to do it. We do it as an obligation-free just consult because we just want people out there being informed. So that way they're protected, their clients are protected. So like, we don't care. To spend a couple of minutes on it to make sure that people are looked after. But yeah, I would say like we went back and we looked at the data for the last 18 months. And I kid you not, we have had over 35 inquiries with this and not a single one had a policy, a clear scope and a clear policy that covered them for those practices.
That's good.
So it was zero. It's not to say that it's going to be a 0% out there. It might be say 5 or 10%. Our sample size wasn't that big, but that's what it was.
Yeah. I'll fully admit that I am not across a nutritionist scope of practice because I am not one and I don't employ them. Yeah. And I don't intend on employing them purely. I think because I have always had that sense of like, man, their scope is messy. I don't want to deal with that. I know at least as a dietitian.
I would be exactly the same. As a business owner, I would be recommending any business owner to employ a dietitian.
Our scope is just like, it's straightforward. Like I know what I can do. Well, mostly because it is kind of like, if it's related to food, knock yourself out. Whereas with, I've always thought of, I've had that understanding that as a nutritionist, I didn't realize that even just general practice was a bit murky, but I thought it is healthy populations. You should not be doing, like I think you mentioned, medical nutrition therapy, like MNT, which is,
it's healthy populations only.
Yeah, which is, I think it would be very rare to find someone who is adhering to that, basically, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting. So what's the difference between a nutritionist and a sports nutritionist? Nothing. Title, but sports nutritionist isn't protected. We've gone out of our way at the association to protect accredited sports nutritionists. What's the difference between nutritionist, sports nutritionist, and an accredited sports nutritionist? The fact, like, then we can say definitively they have minimum standards in qualifications. So our provisionally licensed, like our P platers, have spent 6 months of study and then have had supervised practical hours with our degree qualified, openly accredited assessment team while they're a student in the trenches, like working with clients before they can complete it. They are competent in effectively the way that I like to explain this is like, and I think this should apply to any nutrition professional anyway, but we're just going to look at the sports nutrition modalities, like the fit within these things. But it's like, what does a good practitioner need these days? I'd say the foundation is critical thinking and deductive reasoning. And then that's your foundation. And then you imagine like that's your circular foundation. You got a board above it and you're balancing things. And you've got foundational sciences, applied sciences, research, business, and then behavioral sciences. And so we give them all of that within a sports nutrition context, effectively. So then there's exercise physiology, nutrition physiology, biochemistry, exercise biochemistry, and then all the applied healthy population, general population stuff, as well as healthy population athlete stuff, and then the business and behavior stuff on top of it. And so that's our P platers. And then our openly accredited members have completed that, or at least those subjects, and we have 13 subjects, and a relevant either nutrition or exercise science degree.
Yeah. Well, I think there's the ongoing registration as well. Hey, people don't just get that piece of paper and run off. In similar to as a dietitian, each year, you know, we've got to
That's the other PD. They're registered. Like, they're registered with us. They take out an insurance policy. It doesn't have to be with the provider that we recommend. We assess all of these other policies. It's just based on what we. They need to have a policy that covers those specific activities. There's about five out there now that we're aware of. And all of those insurers come back to us and say, have you audited this person in the last 12 months? We have a 100% audit rate. And then two, have they completed their continuing education? And we give that for free to our members. So there's no like, go and get your points and do this random course to tick a box. We go, we speak to the board. We go, this is what's contemporarily relevant at this point in time. This is what we need to update our curriculum on. This is what we need to update the members on. And then we give it to them from there.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's the difference there. It's yes. Then it's with the registration comes the code of conduct, practicing standards, and then making sure that they're practicing within scope of practice in the audit. So if anyone from the public was wanting to engage one of these people working, wondering what the difference was, it's like these people, you know, have a minimum standard.
Hmm.
Everyone else in the sports nutritionist or nutritionalist or I'm a nutrition coach space doesn't.
Yeah.
And so you could have someone with a degree that really knows what they're doing. You could have someone with a degree who completely oversteps the mark, and you can have someone that's not even watching YouTube.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard with just qualifications, right? Because like we see doctors giving some of the worst nutrition advice I've ever seen, even though, you know, it's not easy to be a doctor, right? They go through rigorous study and multiple years and multiple degrees, and they still give some of the worst nutrition advice I've ever heard. So, like, I think that's why it is important to have that governing body, as much as sometimes I moan about mine. But I get it. Anyway, that's another podcast. But like, it is important that there is that ongoing auditing and that scope of practice, because just saying like, oh, someone's done a degree in this space. Really, I care less and less about that now. You know, it's more that what are they doing ongoing? How are they practicing? All those things.
Yeah.
So
exactly. I think it's good to have a minimum standard of education, but then there needs to be equal emphasis paid to like practical experience, and then also how they practice. So like not just the experience they have, but like what they've been doing with that time.
Yeah.
And that's sort of my Venn diagram of the three.
That'd be great. We should get that. We'll get someone to whip that up, the Venn diagram. Of the, and in the middle is the...
One of the people in post.
Yeah.
So then, to answer the question, to I guess circle back to it, like what's the difference between dietitian and nutritionist? Plenty.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think the easiest line that I've used is nutritionists cannot work with unhealthy populations. Right.
Can't
treat medical conditions, can't treat symptoms, can't treat any of that.
In other countries, this may vary.
In Australia.
In some countries, but it's like if you're in one of those countries that you can, that's you're in a minority, a large, large minority of countries.
But that's certainly not also what we see, right? Like that's, I think the other thing as well is the gray area around body composition of like fat loss. Fat loss in particular, people can argue that it is not a medical condition. Someone's not ill, right? So could a nutritionist, should that be within their scope of practice? But like, I think we need to be really careful because as we know, like fat loss is not risk-free, you know, and some of the most damaging things I've seen has come from someone who is otherwise healthy, who has engaged a health professional to help them lose body fat and has just completely cooked their relationship with food, has nutrient deficiencies, energy deficiencies, like all of these things that have occurred in an otherwise healthy person. So, and again, this is not saying that would be the case for anyone engaging a nutritionist by any means, but it's happened.
Given the subjects that someone can study to get a nutrition degree and what their path looks like, I would reluctantly engage any form of a nutritionist and having looked at what the majority of the curriculum is being taught in those programs for the pursuit of weight loss. purely because like over an accredited sports nutritionist, because I know for a fact that these guys, the accredited sports nutritionists, are going to be trained on energy availability, adaptive thermogenesis, the nutritional and physiological biochemistry of what occurs during weight loss, and then also the behavioral considerations associated with like energy restriction, intentional weight loss, all this kind of stuff. The same way that for the majority of dietetic programs, they will get trained on that as well. I've seen some programs that still don't talk about EA. They talk about female athlete triangle only. So it's not to say that like all dietetic programs are amazing.
No, absolutely.
Depending on what, like you've got a very narrow, depending on your undergrad and depending on the postgrad program you go into, or if you just do bachelor's with honors, you have a very like narrow amount of subjects and flexibility that you can choose. So sometimes it's just the nature of the program or the university that you go to.
Well, and
you're not going to be exposed to this.
I just want to clarify, obviously, as a dietitian, I'm also coming across as, I'm conscious of coming across as, we are above reproach. We are, I saw an ad for a new, like for a dietitian. There was a clinic that was looking for a dietitian, and it was a group of dietitians looking for a new dietitian who had to embody the low carb way. They could only, you know, that was what the clinic did, and they had to embrace that, and they were only allowed to practice in that sense, which is dumb. Right. And that's me. That's not Alex from SNA saying that. So if anyone's going to come after anyone, but like that was a team of dietitians saying that this is the way is low carb, you know, keto, a little bit of carnivore thrown in. I went and stalked their website, of course. And so like, that's a group of dietitians. So like, unfortunately there's charlatans in every profession. I do think that by looking at someone's credentials, where they've studied, what they're still like, who they're registered with, like we've talked about, like, you know,
the registration requirements.
Exactly. You know, so if you're looking for someone, I would always look for their credentials. Firstly, if they're not displaying that, run away. No one with any legitimate credentials forgets to put that on their website, right? Or forgets to put that in their Instagram bio, because like, I didn't pay 80K or whatever I paid to not tell people I'm a dietitian, right? So
I'd be sharing it from
the when I go to parties. Hello, I'm John, I'm a dietitian. No, but like, yeah, anyone who
has to me your food team.
Oh no, actually I try and hide that fact at parties, but at like anyone with a legitimate credential is going to be talking about it, or any credential really. So at least look for one. If they've got one, I would then go and investigate that body. Right? You know, look at the university. Is it a legitimate university? Look at the association or the other credentialing, you know, business, for lack of a better term. Like, where are they?
Yeah,
what do they have standards? Do they have a scope of practice document? All of those sorts of things. Like, it is a little bit of work. Scope of
practice, does it say advice? That's a big one to look for.
Yeah, right.
Provision of advice or recommendation of like positive health outcomes, things like that, where it's not. If you're engaged in a personalized service and it says advice, that's a very different thing. General advice is the same thing as providing healthy, like endorsing the healthy eating guidelines to people, right?
So yeah, right.
Every country has healthy eating guidelines. That's advice. Eat more veg, do this. That's advice. It's general. It must say in the scope, personalized nutrition, either services or intervention, that type of thing. If it says advice, then, and that person's giving you a personalized service, they're not covered for it.
Yeah. And it's work to find this stuff out, right? Like, you've got to go onto someone's website. You've got to go into a governing body's website. You probably could download a few PDFs and read that. But like, again, like you talked about, this is coming from someone trying to engage a professional. It's your health. It is your longevity. It is your life and health span. Like, I don't think spending an extra 15 minutes to get to the bottom of this is a misuse of your time at all. I think it should be bare minimum.
And if it's too much, then your goals don't matter that much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or your health.
10 minutes. Yeah. So please spend the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we've got it.
I think so. I think, look, we haven't touched on dietitian versus sports dietitian, which we said we were going to. And I should know better.
I have to part B that.
Yeah, maybe we should. Maybe we should, because then Jono will go and do some actual research and make sure I don't annoy anybody or say anything.
Actually, yeah, that'd be good. That'd be come back for the part B and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, cool. So, all right. Hang on. We don't have our, I don't feel like we got our snappy. So you ready for this? This will be the, So Alex, what is the difference between a nutrition, or do you want, No, let's, what we could each do one. What is the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian, and what should people look out for?
A nutritionist cannot practice in medical nutrition therapy, so they can't work with someone to treat a condition or improve a condition directly. So they need to look out for the registration of the accredited practicing dietitian if they have any health concerns they want to work with or work through. And if you're a nutritionist and you want to work with people, keep in mind that they just need to be healthy people only. Do you want to have a crack at that?
Oh, mate, I don't think I could do better. I think that was great. Yeah, I think it's, I think that's what it comes down to, right? It's like if you have a health condition and you are seeking treatment, medical nutrition, therapy, or treatment for that health condition, it needs to be an APD, an accredited practicing dietitian in Australia. That's kind of, there's no real wiggle room there, is there? Yeah, a registered dietitian. Yeah. What are they in the UK?
Yeah.
RD as well?
RDs. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty common there.
I wish we were RD. In most
countries, it needs to be a dietitian for medical therapy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the second add-on bit, this can be highlight 2.0, you know, the little toy that you eat with your Happy Meal. But if you are a nutritionist and you're working in private practice with clients, then a lot of the time with your registration, scope and coverage, even if you're degree qualified with a professional association, it's not necessarily going to cover you for private practice. In the UK, you've got the AFN, they're great. That's for private practice. But a lot of other countries
don't have
the AFN.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So a lot of other countries and regions don't have the AFN. And so having having registration for personalized nutrition practice is just not as common as what is in the UK with the AFN. And so the registration is typically for being a part of ongoing updates to research and being plugged into the research and then the communication of that research for public health improvements, which is not private practice. Mm. So that's the other thing to consider when it comes to practicing as a nutritionist.
Yeah. Well, and I think if someone is feeling like they need to come at us after listening to this, may I suggest first going at your governing body first, or your credentialing, the place you got your credentials from, hold them accountable and get answers out of them and don't let them get away with the, oh, you know, well, maybe you could sort of, I guess you could maybe, you know, go, well, hang on, what am I actually accredited to do? What have you enabled me to do? Rather than saying,
what are you endorsing me to the public for?
Yeah.
What am I protected for?
Yeah.
Because what are their expectations?
Neither of us can help you with that.
No. And then like if anything changes or an association is like, you know what, we've been meaning to do this. We've got this in on the background. We've been working on it for the last 18 months. Can you give us a plug when that goes live? Hey, we'd love to as well.
Yeah.
Always like to update based on more relevant and contemporary research.
Yeah.
Well, not research, but that's what we do with research, but
up to date with the industry.
Yeah.
Awesome. There you go. Difference between a nutritionist, a nutritionist, and a dietitian. Sorted.
If you have any questions, hit us up.
Yeah.
As well.
Put the show notes.
I'll direct everyone to me if it's nutritionalist related.
you will get the shirt. We'll get the shirt. But yeah, I'll put this stuff in the show notes. I'll put all of the things we've referenced in terms of certain governing bodies and their scope of practices. We'll put, you probably know where to find me if you're listening to this from my website, but we'll put where to find Alex as well and Sports Nutrition, SNA. And then we will catch up to talk dietitian and sports dietitian later. Thanks for coming, man.
Sounds good. Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Cheers.